This is Pittsburgh Explainer, a new podcast from 90.5 WESA. Every Friday, our reporters help you understand some of the most important news stories from southwestern Pennsylvania. It's Friday, March 27th. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Liz Reed. It's week two of extreme social distancing in Pittsburgh in an effort to slow the spread of COVID-19. Allegheny County and a number of other Pennsylvania counties are under a stay-at-home order from Governor Tom Wolf.
This is not a request I make lightly. Pennsylvania is the birthplace of American freedom. Our economy and our way of life were built on this freedom, and it is this freedom I seek to preserve in our fight against COVID-19.
On Monday, enforcement of the governor's ban on non-life-sustaining businesses began. And as the number of cases locally and statewide begins to double rapidly, roughly every 2 to 3 days, the fear of community spread impacts every interaction with the outside world.
We must stay 6 feet away from each other. We must avoid having other people in our homes. We must avoid touching surfaces that others have touched. We must avoid sneezing or coughing uncovered. We must avoid having unwashed hands, and we must avoid leaving our homes.
It feels like life as we know it has ground to a halt. And the question on everyone's mind is, how long will this last? The official answer is, we don't know. But we do know that it depends on when we start to see signs that social distancing is working, according to State Health Secretary Rachel Levine.
So there's going to be a lag before we see evidence of the bending of that curve. So I don't know when it's going to be. I think it's going to be a very difficult number of weeks, but we are hopeful that we'll be able to see progress.
The entire point of social distancing is to deprive the virus of a host. So once it makes its way through one person's body, it has nowhere else to go. Officials say the immediate goal is to buy ourselves some time so that hospitals and health systems can prepare for an expected surge of COVID-19 patients. That surge has come to be known as the curve, and staying home is a way to flatten it. The longer we socially distance, the more slowly the virus makes its way through the community. Modeling done at the University of Pittsburgh's Graduate School of Public Health suggests that 6 weeks might be a good estimate of how long we need to keep this up to see results. Here's Dr. Mark Roberts. He's part of the team doing this modeling.
We have shown that if you are reasonably, strictly social distancing, and you do that for 6 weeks or so, and then you slowly let up on the amount of social distancing, that we can push the peak of the number of serious cases out several months, and we can lower it to at the same level as what we know our number of ICU beds, number of hospital beds, number of ventilators are.
Roberts talked to my colleague, health and science reporter Sarah Bowden, and we'll have more of her reporting on social distancing next week. But right now, it's important to remember that this is all hypothetical. So we wait. We wait until we get some idea of how the coronavirus is progressing in our community. We wait until we know if our social distancing measures are working. We wait to see if we're flattening the curve. President Trump said during a town hall on Fox News on Tuesday that he wants to see the United States open for business again by Easter.
We've never closed the country before, and we've had some pretty bad flus, and we've had some pretty bad viruses, and I think it's absolutely possible. Now, people are going to have to practice all of the social distancing and don't shake hands and wash your hands and all of the things that we're doing now, but we have to get our country back to work.
Meanwhile, the U.S. Senate this week reached a deal with the White House on a third coronavirus relief package to the tune of $2 trillion.
Hello?
Hi, Lucy. It's Liz.
Hey, Liz. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm almost ready. I need to tell my boyfriend to go take his next meeting in the car.
In the car? Do you have like a really tiny apartment?
It's actually a good size apartment, but there's only like doors to the bedroom and I can hear his voice. It's a very nice voice, but I can hear it everywhere. So I'm going to have him go to the car and then I'm going to go shut myself in the bathroom.
Okay. Sounds good.
Okay. Hold on. Can you go?
All right. Have a good podcast.
Okay, thanks. Bye. Okay.
Can you introduce yourself?
Yes. This is Lucy Perkins. I cover government and accountability.
Lucy, this week you've been reporting on this massive aid package that is coming down the pike from Congress. Is this the free money bill? Like, is this the bill that puts money directly in Americans' bank accounts?
So, yeah, the idea here is that Congress wants to put money in Americans' pockets. And how they're going to do that, or how they plan to do that, is sending people direct checks. So if you're a single individual and you filed a tax return last year and you make under $75,000 a year, you are going to get a $1,200 check deposited into your bank account. They say that these checks will hopefully, for the vast majority of people, will not be sent in the mail. So then you don't have to like go to the bank and deposit it and be out in public. They're going to be deposited in your bank accounts. People should see these checks deposited in the first couple weeks of April, they say. Individuals will get $1,200, and then any kids that parents are claiming as a dependent, they're getting $500 extra per child.
Is this a one-time payment or is this ongoing?
So these checks to people, these direct checks, are a one-time payment. But the whole idea with this aid package is that Congress wants to flood the economy with money right now, because obviously so much is just at a standstill. Almost everything's at a standstill. So there's other types of economic support that this bill will also provide. And a really big part of that is to small businesses. There's over $350 billion that's going to go to small businesses. For businesses under 500 people, Congress is saying that they can apply for guaranteed loans from the federal government. And for any of those loans that these small businesses are using to pay employees, so payroll expenses, Congress will forgive them completely, like forgive them permanently for up to 8 weeks. So that's basically like the federal government paying payroll for small businesses for 8 weeks. What Congress wants to do is make sure that when this pandemic is over, that there are still businesses for people to go back and work at and for people to go and spend money in. And so this aid package is trying to keep individuals afloat, but also keep businesses able to be in business when this reopens. There's other one really important part of this that just passed that I should mention for individuals is that, you know, we've seen an enormous amount of people apply for unemployment insurance in the last week or so. And this bill, on top of the unemployment insurance benefits that you get from the state, would give individuals an extra $600 a week for up to 4 months.
Now, earlier in the week, Democrats were unhappy with the inclusion of a $500 billion loan program for larger businesses that they said didn't have enough oversight. Is that still part of this bill? And have any additional guardrails been put in place?
Yeah, so there is a fund in this $2 trillion package to help big corporations, as some Democratic critics put it. We should say that this bill did have bipartisan support in the Senate. It was got a unanimous vote and passed the Senate. But there are some major support systems in place for big businesses, specifically the airline industry. I believe that support would come in the form of grants. But the way that that aid is distributed, there will be an inspector general who oversees it, and there will also be like a congressional oversight panel to oversee how that money is distributed. And that was not in the original version of it.
This all deals with economic fallout. Is there any direct funding in this bill for fighting the pandemic itself?
Yes. So Democrat Senator Bob Casey of Pennsylvania and Republican Senator Pat Toomey both talked a lot about this aid package on Wednesday, and they said, you know, it's fine to push money into the economy. We need to do that, but it doesn't matter if the pandemic isn't under control. So there is a lot of aid for states. Senator Toomey, who was very instrumental in helping craft the language for this bill, he said that Pennsylvania could get up to $5 billion. That funding would be used directly to fight the coronavirus. It would include reimbursements for hospitals who are treating patients who have COVID-19. And obviously, states and hospitals are going to need a lot of help with this.
Are we going to see Congress pass more relief packages in the coming weeks and months, or is this pretty much it?
Well, that's a really good question. From my understanding, the Senate has passed this package, and then they are on recess for a little while. It's an interesting balancing act that Congress is dealing with right now because, you know, you need to be on Capitol Hill in person to vote, but they don't want to be there all the time for obvious health reasons.
But I imagine that there will be more aid packages. I was talking with our Democratic Congressman Connor Lamb from Western PA last week, and he said, you know, yes, we will be doing economic stimulus packages in the future, but right now what we really need to do is just make sure people can pay their rents and buy groceries and be able to feed their families until we can kind of get this whole thing under control, because no one really knows what the future looks like right now.
Lucy, thanks so much for your reporting this week.
Of course.
Talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, Liz, how's it going?
Hi, Anli. I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm good. Just getting some water here quick. Got back from a run a short while ago.
Oh, cool. Have you been able to run every day?
Most days. Luckily, it's one of the things allowed under the governor's stay-at-home order, and it just really helps to break things up working from home all day. So it's been one of the bright spots, I would say.
Okay. Are you ready to talk?
Yeah, let me get under my blanket here.
I'm Anli Herring, and I cover the courts in county government.
Last week, we began to hear calls for inmates at the Allegheny County Jail to be released because of fears of the coronavirus just overwhelming these facilities. What's the status of that?
Right now, what's happened, because you're right, there is a lot of concern about people who are living in these facilities, just given the close quarters and the fact that inmates do share cells and they share communal living spaces and bathroom facilities. There's been a move within the courts for now to process cases at a quicker rate. So court administrators and attorneys are working together to identify inmates who they think would be appropriate to release to prevent any outbreak or at least contain the spread of coronavirus in the jail. So what they're doing is they're finding people who they think could be released, and then they're asking judges to grant motions freeing these individuals.
Are these generally people who have not been convicted of a crime, are just charged, and they're waiting for their case to make its way through the courts?
A good percentage of the people would be in that situation, and I know the Public Defender's Office is looking at cases where people are charged with low-level offenses, they're awaiting trial, but the reason they're in jail is just that they haven't been able to afford to pay bail. Some people, though, are in the jail on convictions for lower-level offenses, misdemeanors that mean that you're going to be serving a shorter sentence, and that's why you're being housed at the jail. So there are different situations. Some people are there just because they violated the rules of their probation, which doesn't necessarily mean they're charged with breaking a law, but they can still be held for that reason. So there are all these cases, and attorneys are asking judges to look at them on an individual basis, but at a much quicker rate than in ordinary times to try to get as many people out of the facility as possible.
Does county council have the power to order broader releases of inmates at the jail?
That was a question that council was discussing earlier this week. There were some Democratic councilors, Bethany Hallam and Liv Bennett originally, who introduced an emergency ordinance that would have mandated the release of entire groups of inmates, mostly people charged with low-level offenses. But ultimately, the bill died in committee just on Thursday of this week. There were concerns that council doesn't really have the authority to pass that kind of legislation, that it's really within the domain of the courts to decide whether people should be held in jail. And then another issue with the bill is that County Executive Rich Fitzgerald was not expected to support it or implement it in any way. So that would have been a real limitation. And there were legal questions as to whether that was an issue with the bill itself. So instead, council is set to pursue a motion that would be non-binding, essentially encouraging the courts to keep trucking with their efforts to release as many people as possible from the jail and really try to contain coronavirus.
Are there any efforts to release prisoners from state facilities?
That's a whole other set of agencies you would have to work through. And the American Civil Liberties Union and a number of other groups have called on the state to do just that. That would involve the Department of Corrections, the Board of Parole, potentially even the Board of Pardons. And they're saying essentially you should identify groups that could be eligible for release. So those could be people who have already served their minimum sentence but haven't yet been granted parole. Yeah, there have been calls like that on state-level actors, but that would be a whole other kind of apparatus that you're working through.
Anlie, thanks so much for helping us understand what's going on in the county jail and state prisons this week.
Well, thanks for having me, and it's good to talk to you, Liz.
Thanks. Bye.
Hello.
Hi, Bill. It's Liz.
Yes, I figured.
Are you ready to talk?
Yes, I am. I'm just I'm heading down to my little space here. So my wife has very generously and creatively put together a little impromptu sound booth for me here using some moving blankets that she has, and it's like a little bat cave, and blocks out some of the sound that might otherwise come in from the outside world. I'm Bill O'Driscoll. I'm arts and culture reporter for WESA.
So, Bill, what's it been like reporting on arts and culture when everything is shut down?
Well, it's very strange. Everything's pretty quiet. There's, people still working at these organizations, but of course no one can gather in public. Right now it's just people are just scrambling. They're absorbing information, and that's a little, and trying to determine how they're going to proceed during this indefinite shutdown, and then doing whatever planning they can for after things open back up.
Which we don't know when that's going to be, right?
We have no idea. They're already, we're seeing things now being canceled into May. The Carnegie Museums are tentatively shut down, at least in the mid-May, for instance. So I think we're looking for, obviously, a very quiet April in the local arts scene. And likely beyond that, too.
You've been reporting this week about how arts groups are faring financially during the shutdown. What have you found?
Well, it's rough for them, obviously, to the extent that they rely on earned income, which is ticket sales and selling other kinds of goods and merchandise. That's pretty much totally shut down. And the impact is kind of proportional to the size of the organization, I guess. You know, City Theater, which is one of the city's bigger independent theater companies, they have a budget of about $3 million. They say they're going to lose about $450,000 in cash. That's like, you know, almost a sixth of their budget.
And that's just from ticket sales?
That's from single ticket sales during March, because they had one production that they cut short, another one that they canceled entirely. And then their one that was supposed to open in May has been postponed. And also, it's their time of year, as with many theater companies, to be renewing subscribers for next year. They've announced their season. This is when they get people to sign back up for next year. So that's cash that they count on to operate and, you know, take them into that season. Other groups have had to cancel or postpone fundraisers. Like the Pittsburgh Opera just postponed its big fundraiser. Attack Theater, Dance Company, did the same thing, moving it from spring to fall. They're missing out on a lot of opportunities.
Does it matter how an arts group gets its funding, whether it's earned income through ticket sales, for example, or educational offerings, or if most of their funding comes from grants and philanthropic support?
That's a good point, because a lot of people don't know that many of these arts groups, nonprofit arts groups, get a majority of their revenue from contributions, which is foundation money, a little bit of money from things like the regional asset district, individual and corporate donors. On average, an arts group in this region gets about two-thirds of its revenue from contributed sources, and about a third comes from earned revenue, which would be the things like ticket sales. Usually it's better to get your money from earned revenue, right? Because you don't have to rely on philanthropic gestures and donations. But I had one head of an arts group tell me this week that this is actually a time when it's a bit of a handicap to make your money from earned revenue, because it all just stops. This was actually Pittsburgh Glass Center. They get about half of their revenue from earned income, which is classes and things like that. They're really struggling. They had to furlough some workers, as some other arts groups have done as well.
Are any groups at risk of closing, just shutting down completely?
I talked to a bunch of them this week. Everybody is saying, you know, we're shut down now, but we're going to be back. I think they're all at risk. Most of these groups do not have big cash reserves on hand. Some of them are working on very slim margins. It's a good year for them if they're in the black at all. And so there's definitely risk to all of them, but all of them are soldiering on for now. You know, the longer the shutdown goes on, of course, the greater the risk becomes.
We've seen a lot of examples of artists, especially performance artists, musicians, things like that, putting their art online, whether, you know, in an effort to raise money or just for free, because they want to share their art. They want to bring some light to this very difficult time that we're all facing. Do you have any favorite online arts offering of the last week or so?
Yes. Thursday, Pittsburgh Public Theater started a play reading series. So they have professional actors doing readings of plays. And I don't know all the plays they're going to do, but they're starting this week with the great Oscar Wilde comedy, The Importance of Being Earnest. And that is free, but they do take donations. And there's some really good actors that are performing in that, local and otherwise. And so it should be a lot of fun.
Great. Well, Bill, thanks for keeping tabs on the arts community as we all hunker down to try and get through this together.
Absolutely. Thanks, Liz.
To close out the show this week, we head to the Mexican War streets on Pittsburgh's north side, where on Thursday evening, neighbors came out of their homes to sing together. That's Pittsburgh Explainer for this week. Our show is produced by Katie Blackley. Larkin Page Jacobs is our managing editor. I'm your host, Liz Reed. You can find all of WESA's reporting on our website, WESA.fm, and of course, on the air at 90.5 FM. Thanks for listening. Let's talk next week.